Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Welcome back to the worst year ever.
Welcome back to the worst year ever. The Blitz on the coast to coast. It's September somewhere, so drink up, folks. Gobble, gobble.
Wow.
Guzzle it down.
Robert,
Cody,
your turn.
Cody, we should have done a time machine noise if you were going to go back and show us Cody Johnston, Radio Shock Jock in 2001.
I think that guy never left.
Yeah, well,
I think 9/11 just made that guy more powerful.
9/11 made that guy several members of Congress. Well, state Congresses.
State Congress.
At least.
But
vice president for a while.
And vice president, shit. Yeah, he was a shock jock.
Yeah.
You're 100% correct.
He's just complaining about Mulan on the radio and becoming the vice president.
And now we've got one as our gubernatorial potential governor.
Phrase, we should have death squads for that group of people, is said too much. But what if just for radio shock jocks?
Some of these old adages are overused, but there's a reason. Yeah.
There's a time and a place for a death squad, and I think it's hunting down everybody who was on the radio prior to.
And there are so many things
to now,
I
including
have
us.
Been tricked into saying on this show that could easily come back to haunt me throughout the rest of my life, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Cliches are cliches for a reason, all right?
It could come back to haunt you, or Katie, you could be
back to haunt
you. You could be president, the next Vice President Pence, but with better hair.
One could hope, one can dream big.
You will have to change your name. The Pence and the Bear in the Morning.
And my whole, like, vocal style as well. Ugh,
yeah.
Yuck.
You know, sacrifices.
I'd rather be an NPR Muppet. Thank you. What are we talking about here today, guys and gal? Lots of stuff.
A lot
guys
of things
and dolls.
That are happening. Mm-hmm.
Guys and dolls.
Brigadoon.
Brigadoon? You want to talk about Brigadoon?
No.
Fiddler on the Roof.
That's a third one.
Yeah. Are we naming musicals?
Do we have? Is there a fourth? Is it the fourth on anyone's tongue? No.
The King and I.
Oklahoma.
Yeah. Ooh, there we go. Ooh,
oh,
that's
Oklahoma.
Five.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, my grandma just would listen to that on repeat while she was dying.
Oh,
all
wow.
The oh
yeah.
That I was gonna keep it playfully, but you brought it back down.
That's my job.
Deserve
Katie.
To be.
It's literally the only thing I do.
as the anchor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm the anchor that gives your spirits license to be dragged down to the earth and pummeled with poison.
Bless you.
You drag the buoys down.
You drag the buoys down. You know what today is, everybody? Speaking of things that are sad.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It is the 18th anniversary of the death of my favorite songwriter, Mr. Warren Zevon.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Everybody's loss. He was the best. He was
I'm so sorry
incredible.
For our loss. What yeah. What are some of his... Hits.
Well, his best-known song is also his worst song, which is Werewolves in London, which is a fine
right?
song, but it's not nearly his best. It's probably
Werewolves in London.
But
am
he also did Play It All Night Long, which includes the line, there ain't much to country living, sweat, piss, jizz, and blood. He did Lawyers, yeah. Guns, and Money. He did Rollin' the Headless Thompson Gunner, a classic. Carmelita, one of the best songs ever written about being on heroin and going through a breakup.
Oh.
Carmelita, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down and I'm all strung out on heroin on the outskirts of town. It's a beautiful piece of music.
Are we going to start honoring the deaths of people we enjoy?
Just Zevon. Just Zevon. I don't give a fuck about anybody else. Yeah.
All right.
Keep Me in Your Heart for a While. Also a classic. My Shit's Fucked Up. One of the best songs about aging. He was a great musician and I'm
Splendid
sad because he died.
Inhaler.
Oh yeah. The French Inhaler. Oh, such a good song. And yeah, Splendid Isolation. I want to live all alone in the desert. I want to be like Georgia O'Keeffe. I want to stay on the Upper East Side and never go down to the street. Oh, man. I love Zevon.
Damn. R.I.P.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Enjoy every sandwich. All right. What's the news?
9/11's coming up.
It is. Did something happen on that date?
4 days after Warren Zevon's anniversary.
No, he lasted a couple of years earlier. Later, it was 2003. He died. Oh, you know what did happen right around September 11th, 2001? The movie Big Trouble with Tim Allen came out.
That must be what it is.
And nothing was ever the same afterwards. It really did. You know, it really changed everything.
It really caused some trouble.
Changed everything.
Yeah, because that movie put together such a plausible picture of an airplane hijacking. We got the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security.
I'll never forget that morning when it was released.
When it was released, when Big Trouble, the adaptation of the Dave Barry book, launched.
Katie, girl, my love, you need to get up now. You need to see this.
Mm-hmm. You need to see this. Adaptation of Dave Barry's novel.
Patrick Warburton is almost naked in several scenes.
You know, and I look back on that morning and I regret being like, fuck you, Dad. But he was right.
In retrospect, surprising that that movie got us into Afghanistan.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And honestly,
I was unsurprised. I called it.
Inexcusable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should we talk
Tim Allen
about
and Zooey Deschanel together? No, thank you. Yes, Katie, we should probably talk
the
about
news.
Yeah.
We've warmed up. We've vamped.
Really, really just delayed the inevitable.
Things
we?
Are loose.
Should we talk about all the people dying from fentanyl right now?
Are we starting with that?
Yeah, because it's short. So basically, last week, three fairly prominent comedians died in a single night from tainted drugs. I don't think we know exactly what the drugs were. My guess is it was cocaine, maybe K or something. I'm guessing they were snorting a powder. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they got a tainted batch of drugs. And then very soon after...
They were at the same party. Yep.
They were at the same party. Soon after, it was Michael Williams, was the Omar from The Wire. Incredible actor. Died of an overdose in his apartment. And what's... Obviously, it's not more concerning when rich people die than when poor people die. But when you start getting the kind of drugs that people with money have access to showing up tainted, it paints to a really significant issue with the supply chain, because these are not folks who are like buying shit under a bridge or whatever. These are people generally probably buying from dealers they know, paying good money, and used to getting stuff that is of high quality. And so if their shit is being cut with dangerous amounts of fentanyl, it points to, and there's a number of reasons for this. One of them is that there's a shitload less boat traffic, because of the pandemic and stuff, there's a bunch of like supply chain issues. So there's a lot fewer places for drugs to get smuggled in, which I think is why maybe stuff's getting cut more. I don't think we know entirely, but there is the fact that this is happening so much to people who generally are able to protect themselves from that kind of from those kind of problems points to a really significant supply chain issue. And
yeah.
The closest thing to a solution, I'm not one of those people who thinks that you should just like say, hey, just don't do drugs and you'll be fine. Because like, number one, if people are addicted to drugs, if you're addicted to heroin,
you're gonna do
some fucking heroin. And like,
you understand the risk that comes with using the drug.
Yeah. There's ways to mitigate the risks of fentanyl. One of them is fentanyl test strips. There's a couple of different places where you can get fentanyl test strips. Unfortunately, they are not as easy to get, as common as other kinds of test strips. There's a number of organizations, including Project Dance Safe, that provide test strips to kind of make sure that whatever you're taking isn't adulterated with anything. Fentanyl test strips are harder to get. They are available. One place you can go to try to get test strips is called testsure.com. You're going to go to the section for reagent test kits, and you can find a number of different test kits there. You can look at the National Harm Reduction Coalition. They've got a fact sheet on the fentanyl test strip pilot. Again, it is harder to test for fentanyl currently than you'd want, but there are a variety of testing kits available if you're in this. It's not super expensive.
Yeah.
If you're going to do fucking drugs, please take care of yourself. And this is at the moment kind of the only real option I think most people have, other than making sure you have Narcan and doing drugs. If you're going to fucking shoot up heroin, do it with a buddy, you know, and make sure one of you has Narcan.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert. That's all really good and important information to share. This is probably a really naive question. I know that it is, but
are drugs?
My question is fentanyl being cut into cocaine, something that we know is lethal and people are doing it just to make money? Is this not something, or is there, are there times when it's not? You know what I mean?
I'm not enough of an expert on why my involvement allegedly in industries adjacent to this was prior to fentanyl being super common. Yeah. So I can't tell you. So I think some of it is just like cutting it to reduce costs. But also a lot of the people selling this shit are not the ones cutting it. In other words, sure, it would have gotten adulterated before it got to them. And, you know, the thing that those dealers are doing that's irresponsible is not testing their shit.
You just think that you'd see a train of a trail of people that have died from the second this product gets out into the mix, you know?
You do. I mean, again, three in a night from a single party.
There you go.
It's part of it is that prior to, it's getting worse, which is why you're seeing, again, rich people dropping. But people have been dying. Like, fentanyl deaths as a result of tainted drugs have been increasing for a while. It's just
for
been
a number of
poor
years.
People.
I mean, that's surrounded Tom Petty's death as well, I believe, and Prince. So this, again,
well,
to everything. But well, I'm not positive about that, but
Prince,
I saw that
Prince
in
it was a prescription thing, but I don't actually know about that. Yeah.
I agree. I also do not know enough about that. That's my disclaimer, but I did see it referenced in an article discussing fentanyl. So perhaps on some level, but anyway.
Oh yeah, no, I guess it was fentanyl. Yeah. Fake Vicodin laced with fentanyl. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And yeah, wild. It's strong shit. Like, I get why you would lace fake Vicodin with fentanyl, which is that you can't get access to real Vicodin, but you've got fentanyl, which is, for one thing, because fentanyl's so strong, like, always the problem when you're talking about, like, smuggling this kind of shit is what's the most potency you can transport in the least amount of space, because that's easier to get away with, it's harder to get caught, you can get more dollar amount per amount of effort spent to smuggle it. So, you know, if you're taking fentanyl and making it into pills, a lot of times people wouldn't necessarily notice that they're getting fentanyl instead of Vicodin. And you're able to, like, transport more, make more money. The problem is that, like, generally what it is, it's not that, like, any fentanyl tainted pill is going to kill you. I'm sure he took a bunch of fake Vicodins that were really fentanyl that were fine, but you get a hot pill. You know, these are not being pressed medically.
Okay, this
under,
is my question. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So it depends on. Yes. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. You can get what's known as, like, a hot dose or a hot pill, which is just like, because these are not being made under, like, lab conditions. Like the fentanyl probably is being made in a lab, but the pills are not being pressed. Often they're being pressed in somebody's fucking house. Like, there's people who do this and they fuck up and you get way too much. And because fentanyl is so strong, so you can get a large dollar amount smuggled over with less effort and taking up less space. But because it's so strong, if you give someone a little bit more, it can be the difference between life and death. One of the reasons why I take kratom and why I advocate for people who are doing painkillers to take kratom instead is that kratom does not, like, it has health consequences. Don't get me wrong. And it is addictive. It does not depress it doesn't stop you from breathing, you know, which is bad to stop breathing.
We need to breathe.
Is it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's why this pandemic is so bad.
Yep. It's good to breathe. It's,
bringing it back around here.
Mm-hmm.
So, this happened right after, well, I guess the day after we recorded last week, but SB8 has gone into effect in Texas last Wednesday, and it effectively bans abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is, of course, before most people know that they are pregnant. Real quick, before we talk about this, I want to highlight that I said people. I neglected to include this in our conversation on Even More News last week, and I did mean to, but I'll even go ahead and admit that I wouldn't have talked about it even enough at that point. And I think it's a really important point, which is that when we are talking about reproductive rights, we should be cognizant that this is not solely a woman's issue, right? I think we can all accept now that it isn't. There are trans men, there are non-binary people, who are capable of bearing children, and they are just as much a part of this conversation as women are.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, like, people with uteruses really is the more specific one. Yeah.
Yeah, and a few people pointed that out to me really nicely last week, and I want to be like, thank you, guys. Thank you for that constructive way of phrasing it, because you're completely correct. And we should all be cognizant of that as we are navigating these conversations. And I understand that there is a lot of emotion here from everybody from all sides, but we get to work together and be respectful of this conversation. Nobody gets to be a fucking TERF. Okay? Mm. Cool.
It's nice that I saw people pointing out, and it was very respectful and calm, which is rare for criticism. I think also because
I really appreciate that.
And you're open to it and stuff.
And like I said, I did intend to, but I wouldn't even broach the conversation in as big of a way as I should have. So I think that this is all part of our evolution and learning right now, and it's really important. Mm. So when we're talking about this, this is not just affecting women.
It's all inclusive. Texas does not discriminate.
Texas does not discriminate. It's pretty shitty what's happening. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, Texas.
Is that all we got?
No, I mean, it is all. Cody, there was a beautiful moment last year, I think it was last year, where you were starting to get optimistic about how the election might go in Texas. And I said something along the lines of, Texas will always disappoint you, Cody.
Mm, I do remember that.
And I don't want to, you know, there's a way people get frustrated with Texas that I think is bullshit, which is kind of like throwing it under their bus and be like, well, who cares what happens when they made their choice? And like, there's more people, more Democratic voters, more liberals, more leftists in Texas than in many entire states.
Also, I don't want them to die either.
No. When I say Texas will always fail you and disappoint you, I mean Texas as a political being, as a state, will always because it was started by a bunch of slave owning psychopaths in order to increase their personal ability to wield power over people, and it has never not been that. As a political unit, Texas exists to allow a relatively small number of white men to exercise violence and power over everyone who is not a white man in the state.
They're doing a great job.
They're doing a great job. When I say fuck Texas, I'm saying fuck the state of Texas, not the people there, not the.
Like, no.
There's lots of rad communities and people working, and I've like in terms of like the activists and organizers I've met in the U.S. that I respect the most. Some of them are in places like Texas and Mississippi, in Alabama and Georgia, places where
absolutely, it's, you know, they're it's all an filled with battle, wonderful people, but, fighting for human rights.
Yeah.
But your sentiment of fuck Texas, but not the people. Yeah. Is well taken, and also kind of to the point here, because that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
With this law, in that there's nobody to sue, and we will get into this after the break in a moment. But part of the whole debate about the legality of this is that it's unclear who you can go after to enforce this. So it's open season. You get to have citizen reportings of anybody that they think might be aiding and abetting the criminal enterprise of abortions. I'm sorry, abotions. But we'll get into that after this ad break.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, God. Man, those ads. Let me tell
they
you.
Sure did
let
it me for tell me. You.
It was like, you know that feeling when you're getting waxed and you just suddenly feel
Do you
like,
know that feeling when you're getting waxed?
Every single day, Sophie. Mm-hmm. I budget
That's
4 hours a day for a full body
Robert,
waxing.
You're so hairy for that. I'm seeing so much hair on you.
It grows very quickly.
Instead
that's why
a haircut, he just waxes his whole head off.
I have what they Fair call enough. Robin Williams syndrome. Mm-hmm. By which I mean I'm doing a lot of cocaine.
You do a lot of voices and stuff.
Oh, well, that too.
He's always testing his cocaine before he does it, we know.
Oh, no.
So, let's talk some more about Texas. Mm-hmm. I want to call out TikTok and every good citizen who has flooded the tip line enough so that they've had to change its servers.
Oh, and anonymous then they jumping had on the bandwagon, yeah.
Take it down completely. And now they're not sure how they're going to be setting this up. They're going back to the drawing board to
maybe
figure out
a bad
system.
Law.
Maybe it's a bad law. I want to tell them, wherever you run, we will find you.
And if you're one of the beautiful people, we had somebody who created a script in my sub, the Behind the Bastards subreddit, to like help flood the Texas tip line. If you've been flooding them with bullshit, if you've been, you know, working with Anonymous, whatever, you're any part of this effort to make it more difficult for that to exist, thank you. You're doing God's work.
Doing a great job.
Yeah.
It's heartening to know it kind of happens every time there's something like this. You'd think they'd learn by now not to have like anonymous tip lines. Like when Crenshaw, it's always in Texas too.
Yeah.
Crenshaw did
like I said,
that wokeness in the military tip line.
God, yes.
Like,
yes.
Call in if you've experienced wokeness.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone phrase it like, what if it went the other way, that there was tip lines for people that we think shouldn't have XYZ weapons or guns, and what would that look like? Well, it wouldn't fly.
That'll never happen.
So I did want to, people keep, what's going to happen? What are we going to do? I think that that's an important conversation that we don't know the answer to. We talked about this last week, but I will say it here now as well. My frustration in general with the Democratic Party, with Biden failing to do anything significant or even attempt to fight right now. We're not seeing very much. I mean, there's some words there. He's saying they're going to, but where has he been all of these months as it led up to this?
The Biden administration just sort of like these things happen and like, oh, well, it happened. We're going to fight it. It's like, well, you knew weeks ahead of time. Weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Sorry, Katie.
No, I mean, point very well taken and agreed with. people say, what can we do? What could Democrats do? Well, we could actually have a serious conversation about the filibuster. We could have a serious conversation about the Supreme Court. We could actually be working towards that. And some people will shake their heads and laugh and say that that's not realistic. And I would say to them, why not? When will it be? If not now, when? How long do we wait? Till it's all gone? Everything's gone? Till we can't fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we can't fix it. We have to, in a political sense, blow up the court. Yeah, it has to not exist in its current form because it's irreparably broken.
Well, say Katie's point, I agree. Is like, so, like, why not? Like, you guys have the power. You have the majority. Like,
and we might not have it for long. Look at what's happening in
definitely
California.
Definitely won't have it for long.
It's like, Dianne
Feinstein. Yes. Like, we might, the power shift could happen at any moment.
But, like, so, if you have the power, like, what motivates voters to want to vote for you again to keep that power? Oh, if when you have that power, you're not going to do anything with
it. It's the cycle. If they don't do anything, then later on, something will be threatened, and they can say, if you vote for us, then we will stop the bad thing from happening. And they just rely on people forgetting that they don't actually do shit. Although, kudos, Klobuchar, Klobes.
Stepping out into the limelight. Plenty bold. I know that's not her slogan.
She is being plenty bold.
Plenty bold. I wanna say one thing that could be some line of hope for a potential way of proceeding that we could see play out. There could be an appeal to the federal court, I believe. I should have written this down instead of just reading it real quick, which would then make its way to the Supreme Court eventually. But the other way something could happen is if a provider goes ahead and administers an abortion at, like, say, 10 weeks and allows the suit to happen and goes forward, and then you appeal that and it can make its way back to the Supreme Court, because the crux of the reason why the Supreme Court is punting is, as I suggested earlier, and this is in very, very basic terms that I can understand, is that the way the law was designed is that there is nobody that you can hold directly responsible, and there's no way to point out. It's probably unconstitutional, but there's no way to enforce it, essentially. Mm. So, you know, the Supreme Court was signaling their hand by going ahead and deciding this and not letting it exist on the shadow docket. But there is a world where if it comes back and there's an actual lawsuit, as I think that this law that I'm being sued under is illegal, that's another opportunity for them to revisit this case. Mm-hmm. In the interim, what are we going to do about the Supreme fucking Court? In the interim, I don't know if that'll happen, but that is a possibility.
I mean, that's what you want it to be challenged. It's a bad law.
Yeah. So,
but yeah,
there is that. But in the meantime, it's effectively getting rid of abortion for women in Texas. And let's be real, in very short order, Republican lawmakers across this country in red districts, in red states, are going to be copying this law and its evasiveness. They are going to be doing it for themselves. So mm-hmm. we are going to continue to see this happen.
Yeah.
And of course, there will be an actual ruling this term that is directly related to Roe v. Wade. So obviously, none of it's good.
I mean, none of it's
good. I've talked myself down slightly positive point.
There are things that can be done in the future. And obviously, you know, support for organizations in Texas who are helping people when they can. I do think there's an interesting quote going around today to your point, Katie, about how you just brought yourself down and how it's bad. There's a governor of Texas, Abbott. He was talking, answering questions earlier today, and someone was asking about the fact that, pregnancies due to rape or incest are also still part of this law.
Right.
And his answer was that, like, we're going to get rid of all the rapists. That was literally, like, what he said. He's like, well, we'll just, like, we're going to go after all the rapists and they'll all be arrested and then that won't be an issue anymore, which is wrong for many, many reasons. Also, like, why wouldn't you do that before? If you can just do that, why didn't you do it before?
Why
this
haven't
law?
You done it before, man? Yeah.
Why are you, like, if you're trying to go after the rapists because of this law, why wouldn't you go after them earlier because rape is illegal?
Finally, someone is doing the thing that we've all been saying, get rid of the rapists.
Finally. But also, like, so many, you know, rapes aren't reported and rape kits aren't tested. Like, there's so many things about that specific answer which is not good and presents sort of a false reality. And it's just, like swapping the question aside. Like, well, we'll do, like, precog shit. We'll minority report the rapists away or whatever. But in answering this, he says that the law provides at least 6 weeks for a person to get an abortion. He's saying it's fine. The law provides at least 6 weeks. No one pointed out at the time, and I don't see anybody really pointing this out. He doesn't say, like, oh, you get 6 weeks and then this. He says you get at least 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And, like, it doesn't specify, like, the it doesn't say 6 weeks in the actual law, I don't think. It's, like, it's heartbeat based. But, like, he's saying it provides at least 6 weeks because he knows that it's a bad law and that it's not actually very popular. It's popular amongst the base and things like that, but he knows it's hard to argue in favor for it, like, on camera, I think, in front of people.
Oh.
So he pops in these, like, well, at least 6 weeks. Like, well, it's not at least six weeks. It is 6 weeks. And I just found that very interesting. And I'm
yeah, it's at most
I'm,
6 weeks.
I'm yeah, exactly. And, like, I'm using it as a little nugget of false hope that this could just fall apart for them because I think they know that it's indefensible. And in order to defend it,
it's an unconstitutional law.
Right. In order to defend it, they have to lie and slip in these words to make it not seem as severe as it is. If he's saying, like, well, you have at least 6 weeks when that's not actually true, then that's, I think, an indicator that he knows. Not to say that, like, that's good or good things will come of it. But I think it is something
to be aware of and watch for, that they know it's indefensible and they can't. Yeah. And I do wish somebody in the room pointed that out to him, but that's fine. They were probably busy being like, wait, did you just say you're going to go after all the rapists now because of this?
Yeah.
No, it's not fine, but.
It's not.
Before we move on from this, I just want to circle back around to that filibuster conversation, because there's just one little point I wanted to mention. There is a world, such a long shot, but, you know, if say we did eliminate the filibuster, you could pass the Women's Health Protection Act, and doing that would codify Roe into law, which would be good. But again, bringing this back around, that is contingent upon the conversation around the filibuster drastically changing into something that actually is supported by the Democratic institution. Mm-hmm. And aside from Klobuchar, we don't know yet that that's happening. And obviously there's a lot of resistance to it.
Plenty Bolduchar. Yeah, we'll see about that. You know, Manchin and the cinemas of the world are always going to be
The Manchinimas.
There's some real estate agent named Manchin in my neighborhood, and I keep seeing their signs, and it's just like their name is really big. And I'm like, the fuck? I think it's not a campaign sign, though. It's just a realtor.
So one thing I wanted to note, the episode of It Could Happen Here about this will have dropped by the time this episode comes out. With the increasing restrictions on women's health access in Texas and Florida, looks like they're going to follow suit. I'm sure other states will try to push versions of this law.
Reproductive health access.
Yeah. Self-managed abortion is going to become even more necessary. And this is the use of a couple of different pills to induce an abortion. And it's the kind of standard protocol is good up to, I believe, 9 or 10 weeks, but it you can do it further on than that, actually. It just, there's a different kind of amount that you have to take. We have a great interview on It Could Happen Here on self-managed abortion with a woman who's been working on providing access and training for years. Her organization provides training to women or men who want to be able to train others in providing self-managed abortions. There's information on like where you can find these pills and get them. The legality, you know, is going to depend on where you are, but you can also pretty much get the pills anywhere if you look into it enough. So regardless of what the state of Texas says, you can get yourself access to medication that will allow you to help yourself and others take control of your reproductive health.
Thank you. I think that's a really good point and valuable information to share. Slight correction, you said women's reproductive health.
Right,
Texas.
Yep.
And
reproductive
we'll just
health.
Say,
yeah.
But that's part of this. It's like, let's start to be aware, you know?
Yeah.
All right. What else we got, guys? Shall we take one other quick break and then
back? Yeah, let's break it up.
Yeah.
Speaking of pills.
We'll be right back.
Here's
after
another
we guzzle them.
For pills. Buy pills.
Welcome to the worst year ever.
We didn't officially come back from break, but maybe we did.
We've been back from break. By the way,
back.
Some good news. Mexico just decriminalized abortion.
Yes.
Which is,
wow.
They're the world's second biggest Catholic country. Kind of a huge deal, actually.
Yeah.
It is.
So that's
Mexico. Does Mexico border any states?
No one knows, actually, Cody. Okay. The borders of Mexico are a longstanding mystery. Scientists have debated this for thousands of years.
Okay, well, they should work harder.
I think they're vortexes or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Shall we talk about Brazil, Robert?
I love Brazil. empanadas, empandinas.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah, those are great things.
Yucca biscuits. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I love yucca.
Yucca's delightful.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. Is there anything else going on in Brazil?
You're the one that pitched it as a topic.
Yeah,
so.
That doesn't sound like me. Yeah, so.
And according to Twitter and the news, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Brazil's main exports and imports? Landmass also.
I mean, the main export of Brazil is Jair Bolsonaro, pictures of Jair Bolsonaro dying in the hospital. Uh-huh. And the main import of Brazil is medication to keep Jair Bolsonaro from dying.
Mm-hmm. So it's quite the equilibrium they have going on there.
So that's what we call a symbiotic relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The world's sickest man, Jair Bolsonaro, in between repeatedly catching COVID-19 and having shit sucked out of his nose through a tube, is dealing with the fact that his administration is kind of coming apart a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Brazil has the world's second highest COVID-19 death toll. It's his response to the virus, which has been denying it exists, denying that the best medication for it exists, and telling people to lick each other. It has not worked, and it's kind of a fucking disaster. His popularity has taken a real significant hit. And this is coming on the heels of the fact. So the person who preceded him, or one of the people who preceded him, Lula, the former president of Brazil, was like jailed for corruption, and then it was shown that he had not done the things that he was jailed for. It was all bullshit. And Lula seems likely to enter the race, and polls suggest that he would beat the shit out of Jair Bolsonaro. So it's not a good time for Bolsonaro, and this is compounded by the fact that the Supreme Court of Brazil has been throwing some haymakers towards his far-right movement, which, like all far-right movements, seeks total control and the ability to exercise unchecked violence over their opponents.
What's a haymaker? Give me the etymology.
It's a big old punch.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a
Is
real
that
good
how you
punch.
Make hay?
Yes. I mean, it's how you knock someone into the hay, they pass out, you know, whatever.
That's how you make bricks in Minecraft.
Yeah, it is.
I'm adding a lot to this conversation.
I'm just starting to dig into like what's kind of happening here. I'm not an expert on the present situation, but the gist of it is that the Supreme Court, particularly the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, has issued rulings that have led to the jailing of a number of Bolsonaro's supporters for financing and inciting violence, and attempting to, you know, do overthrow the government shit. And while this has been happening, like his son, Eduardo, has been repeatedly talking about how awesome the insurrection on January 6th in the U.S. could have been and like how it could have been done better.
That's right.
And this
He's
is
not wrong. It could have been done better.
But he was there, right?
He wasn't there. I don't think he was there on January
6th. Bolsonaro's son, I thought. Okay.
Was he? I know that he and Bolsonaro have ties to Bannon, and they've been talking to Bannon, and a former Trump administration official was just in Brazil talking
Jason
to members of the
Miller
Bolsonaro.
Was detained.
And was detained by the Brazilian government for probably trying to help Bolsonaro and his family carry out a coup.
It really seems like that's why, right?
Yeah,
What was Eduardo Bolsonaro doing in Washington during the January 6th coup? I don't think he was at the writing. I think that he was in Washington.
But it's shady.
If there was something, you know, and he was praising it, but also, yes, saying that.
And that's to the point. This is a global far right power grab, right? They tried it on January 6th. They're trying it now in Brazil. And so basically, there's been this movement among the far right in Brazil to literally hold a military coup that Bolsonaro himself has explicitly endorsed that, like, yeah, let's take power, basically. And they held a big march today that it seems like it's gone more peacefully than expected. There was a lot of worry about this, that they would actually try to storm and take over the government. Bolsonaro expected to get 2 million supporters. He only got about between 110 and 125,000. Because, again, these people are always way less popular than they pretend to be. But Bolsonaro has also said that he's no longer going to abide by rulings from the chief of the Supreme Court. Saying, I'm going to see, you know, during the re-election, whatever the court says, like, fuck it, I'm not listening, which is a problem in a democracy. There's a lot going on here. But it is, again,
well, it seems like he's doing like these things that are like, it's Trump, but less dopey. He's like doing like it's the trial balloon was Trump and his silly incompetence.
100%.
They're like,
oh, 100%.
Yeah. And it's like,
Bolsonaro's son visited Trump last week.
There's a bunch of fucking. So this is what President Bolsonaro's son, Eduardo, who's also a congressman, said about the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Quote, if it had been better organized, they would have taken the Capitol and made specific demands previously established by the invaders. Yeah, and he just on August 4th met with Steve Bannon. We had a great conversation. We share the same worldview. He's said to be an enthusiast of Bolsonaro's campaign, and we are certainly in touch to join forces, especially against cultural Marxism.
I found, guys, on the evening of January 6th, before Congress had finally completed the certification of Joe Biden's election as U.S. president, Eduardo Bolsonaro posted a photo of himself beside Trump supporter Michael Lindell, saying, pleased to meet Michael Lindell, a former news junkie, now a successful businessman in the U.S., and Mike Lindell, of course, very integral to it. So that's where I got it.
No, that's good. That's good, Con. And so Jason Miller, the former Trump advisor, was in Brazil for the Brazilian CPAC, which, again, this is the point. Like, this is a global far-right power grab. These people, and he was on Steve Bannon's show the day before he was detained talking about how he'd been with the Bolsonaro family. Mm-hmm. Like, and fucking Eduardo Bolsonaro was just photographed in a, I believe it looks like he's in a fucking helicopter. In a helicopter wearing a Project Veritas shirt. Like they're all it's a global
classic
thing that's coming together here, and they are iterating, and again, maybe it doesn't look like it's gonna work. This coup is gonna work this time, you know, with Bolsonaro. Who knows, maybe he'll lose re-election,
maybe like a bobcat will eat his liver or something.
They're gonna keep trying, and they're gonna keep altering their tactics and experimenting with things, and it's not enough to just be like, well, they failed again. This is clearly never going to be another problem. Like, no, they're learning. They're
right. They're going to fail a little less. Then they're going to fail a little less.
We're actively watching them learn. Mm-hmm. They're not even hiding it.
Yeah. We all need to be. We need to be says, fucking on guard for this shit.
Eduardo says it in part of that quote that if they were better organized and prepared, they would have had the power to kill the Congress people they despise. Like, he says it there, like, just do it better next time. Be more organized, be more prepared, have clear goals. That was the lesson. And
when people tell you who they are, believe them.
Yeah. As fucking Hans
Gruber.
No. I think it was Hans Little. He was a German lawyer who put Hitler on trial immediately prior to the Nazis taking power. And like one of the Hans Litten, one of the line he repeatedly used as Hitler was kind of hemming and hawing about whether or not he encouraged violence was, don't listen to him. He's telling the truth, right? Don't listen to him. Like, don't listen to these like justifications he comes up with. Like, listen to like. When he says these horrible things that he later claims, oh, that was a joke, that was an exaggeration, that's not, like, listen to, like, these people are very clear about who they are. And they always have a separate line that they can give you to try to make it sound like they're less extreme and less dangerous, but like, listen, look at their actions. They're telling you who they are. They want to take total power, and they want to fucking kill anybody who doesn't want them to have total power. And their goal, whether they're the fucking Republican Party of Texas, Jair Bolsonaro's supporters, the Proud Boys wandering around beating people in the streets of Olympia, Washington, they want the ability to do unchecked violence to people they disagree with. It is about exerting force. That's all it is. That's all it's ever been. And you can either let them do it or not. But you can't just ignore them.
God, it's...
Or pretend that they're...
And it's hard. Mm-hmm. You know? It's hard to see people... It's like, I see this in, like, relationships and just different dynamics across the board. Like, you're like, that person can't possibly be that evil. Person couldn't possibly have this kind of worst intention. Yes, they can, and they do. They can and they do.
They can and they do.
They can't possibly be willing to kill people over this. They can and they are, you know?
It's the people. It's like the people who say, I have a lot of respect for certain kinds of pacifism. Because there's a lot honorable about the actual, if you read like kind of the actual intellectual traditions of pacifism. But the people who say like violence doesn't solve anything, like, you shouldn't arm yourself. You shouldn't be prepared to use force against your enemies because that makes you as bad as them. Like, no. Violence will solve you. If there's no force on your side to protect you, violence will solve the problem of your existence. And your existence is a problem for the fascists. And they will solve that problem using violence if you don't have the ability to exert force against them. And you can't rely on the fucking cops to do it. Because a lot of the cops agree with these people.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, they can.
Yeah. We are not in the, we are well past the point of being able to hope this genie gets put back in the fucking bottle. We are well past the point of voting this problem away. There are, I'm not saying force is even most of the solution. It's actually not most of the solution at all. And it, you, I think you have to historically, if you're analyzing the flaws of pacifism in combating fascism, you have to analyze the flaws against of militant anti-fascism, right? The anti-fascists in Germany that modern Antifa type people idolize, they're obviously people to respect because they stood up against the Nazis. They also lost. So we shouldn't just be like, the solution to the problem of fascism is multifaceted, but you do have to have the ability to use force on your side. Just like it's not, you know, for all the critiques we have about the military industrial complex, it's not worthless that when Trump called upon the Joint Chiefs to send the army out to murder protesters last year, General Milley was like, no,
like, it's good idea.
It's good that there's, it's good that even if you don't agree with them on 9 things out of 10, there are people with a lot of weapons at their beck and call who were willing to look at that guy and that those orders and say, no, that's fucked up. There's a gap in the ability to do violence right now between the far right and people who are not the far right. And even though the far right is 20-30% of the population at most, if they're the ones with most of the guns and they're all willing to kill, they'll win.
Well, right, because it's not just the weaponry necessarily. It is their desire to kill.
Yes.
Like, it's the there is, and this, you know, not every single person, obviously, but like there is a thirst for violence. And that thirst is very powerful, especially against people that don't necessarily have that thirst. Seems quite bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
Again, eventually a bird will eat Bolsonaro's organs and then he'll become even more powerful.
I'm sorry, was that established earlier? You say again.
I mean,
I think he was attacked by an emu at some point.
Yeah, he has to be.
Oh, I did not. What? I did not know that story.
Yeah, he was attacked by an emu. He got stabbed by a guy. His body is eating itself. You know, good shit.
He sounds like a really healthy individual all around.
Well,
you got other stuff, guys?
No.
We've petered into the end here.
Nothing else is happening in the world.
Long progression of just like,
we're done.
I was like trying to find something fun to pivot around to. And I don't. We're recording a little later in the day. Do you have evening plans?
I have an impossible amount of work to do.
I too have an impossible amount of work to do.
But I, you know, recently moved into a new living situation and I now have a little urban farm with a number of other people. And I spent my weekend pressing apples and pears and making 16 gallons of cider that's currently fermenting. And then
Yay.
We took a shitload of pounds of tomatoes, which we canned, and made a bunch of pickles too, and plum butter from plums,
just Robert, like that sounds so wholesome and fun.
Processing food this and storing calories. Yeah.
At the place where you live?
Yeah, at the place where I live. And we have a problematic amount of eggs from the chickens at the moment. Like it's become an issue. Like we cannot consume the amount of eggs that we are producing.
Can you sell them?
Oh, you could
give
consume
them away.
I don't want to sell them. We give away a lot.
Give them away.
Step up and eat those eggs.
But I think I'm going to experiment. We're going to experiment next with pickling the eggs, because that way then we're also able to produce, you know, on premises and store our own protein long term, which will be neat.
Pickling eggs? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's like if you've ever had like really good ramen, it'll often have like a pickled egg in it.
Yeah,
like
it's usually pickled in the good ramen.
Yeah.
But so how long can you store it like that?
I mean, you can if you're actually properly canning it, right? You can do like the lazy kind of pickling where you're kind of just like throwing some vinegar and cucumbers together And that'll keep in the fridge for like 5 or 6 weeks. But if you're properly canning, where you're like heat treating and all that shit, you can go a couple of years if you're doing it right.
Yeah. Even an egg? Even eggs? Wow.
Yeah, if they're pickled. Yeah, if they're if they're properly pickled.
Blowing
and canned,
my mind.
Yeah.
Man, we are pivoting to a whole different type of podcast here, and I'm into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting stuff. I enjoy. We only have about an acre of land to work, but that's enough to produce a significant amount of food.
I really love this for you. This sounds like a really healthy decompressing activity for you to balance out your workload, and it makes me really happy. And thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, you know, it's nice. I've been advocating. You know, I've had a garden for years, and I've lived on farms off and on across my life. But the last few years, I've been living in a very, very tiny place, and was not able to engage in some of the, like, as much as I would talk about, you know, gardening and different kind of resiliency options and building, you know, ways to kind of be more less dependent upon the supply chains and stuff. I was really more reliant upon just being able to like buy and store food and stuff than I wanted to. And it's very nice to be able to kind of live more of my ideology and gain, learn new skills and kind of gain additional independence from the grid and the system in that kind of way. Without dropping out of society and living in the woods, which Sophie says I'm not allowed to do.
Finding the right finding the right balance, like, and I find it very inspiring. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Katie, he does all right. Drop phrases like, I'm eating grapes on the lanai now.
That's, I have a lanai. Yeah,
I don't know what that is. What's a lanai?
A lanai? It's a fancy word for porch.
He does say things like that now.
Well,
so,
does it have to have any, like, are there any, like, specific features that make it a lanai?
Yes, and you can refer to the documentary The Golden Girls.
He does also reference The Golden Girls often now.
Mm-hmm.
Just suddenly.
You are a golden girl.
Yeah, with the increase in gardening, yes.
Uh-huh.
But, great. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I can see you as a little bit of a Bea Arthur.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I was going to say, are you a Scarlet or a Miranda? Those are two different shows.
I'm a Scaranda.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say.
Scranda, for short.
You know what I respect about that show is how recklessly horny everybody was.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
They were just fucking.
Did not hide it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll look back on women's sexual liberation being tied to Sex in the City.
Didn't hide a single cum.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Not one.
And that feels like the end of the show.
We did it.
Boy, howdy, did we do it. Check us out online at Worst Year Pod. And,
breaking news. Bolsonaro is choking a turtle. He will be fine.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.